The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project live. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's Thursday, 11 a.m. Every week, you can take a little break with us. Every week, a guest is opening up and talk about them, their gender, equality, life. Every week, we open a conversation and we invite you to be part of it.
Today, we have the pleasure to interview Rachel Toms, a student undergrad in history major, a member of the Presbyterian Women
Aotearoa, which is the within the Presbyterian Church of New Zealand, which in our Maori language, in Te Reo, is New Zealand is Aotearoa, so that's where our name comes from. And within the Presbyterian Church of New Zealand, there's a group of women, a network of women who do women's advocacy and raising the voice for women and making sure a woman's perspective and women's issues are being noticed and brought to the table when the wider church is having conversations and making bigger decisions.
Rachel have been invited by the UN to come to New York for the Women's Month to represent the organization on the Commission on the Status of Women. And I had the pleasure to meet Rachel this morning, and she accepted kindly to come and talk to us before flying back to New Zealand, because you come from New Zealand. First of all, hi, Rachel.
Hello.
So I'm going to ask you, are you a feminist?
Yes, I would say so.
And what is your definition of feminism?
My definition of feminism would be someone who believes that women should be treated equally and wants to work for the realization of that in the community they live and in the wider world.
And can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? So you live in New Zealand?
I live in Dunedin on the South Island of New Zealand. I've lived there for 2 years, and my parents are living there also with me. We moved from Northern Ireland, from Belfast, where I grew up, and my dad got a job in New Zealand, so as a family we moved there. I have an older brother who's studying in Edinburgh. He's studying environmental law in Edinburgh. And my study is it's a Bachelor of Arts, and I've taken some papers in women's studies and a Spanish minor, but my major and my main passion is history.
Well, and what part of a history do you focus on or do you like most?
At the moment, I've been particularly interested in New Zealand history, getting to know that new place that we're in, and I think I'm looking at the histories of peace and conflict and how people's stories shape the history of the land they live in.
So you were born and raised in Belfast?
Yeah, so I was born in London and then moved to Belfast when I was six, so most of my formative years, I would say, were in Belfast.
Okay. So your parents first were in the UK?
Yeah.
Were they, because Northern Ireland is part of the UK?
It's part of the United Kingdom. My parents met in New York. My mum is from Chicago originally, and her family, most of her family, still live here around the Northeast. Then my mum was studying at Union in New York City, and my dad went from London, where he was born and his family still live, to study at Union for a year, and they met there and then moved back to London. My mum came back with him to London, and that's how they ended up being from different places. And then later on, when I was six, in 2002, my dad got a job in Belfast, so we went there to Belfast. My mother is a Presbyterian minister, so, and actually my grandfather before that was a Presbyterian minister. So it's kind of been something that's been in the family, that there's a tradition of going to church and going to Sunday school and growing up in the Presbyterian community. And then when we moved to New Zealand, when I was looking to find a new community and network with people and be in this new place, the Presbyterian Church was one place that really welcomed young people, and you didn't have to offer them anything and they were ready to have you, and really very welcoming. So that was probably the first place in New Zealand that I made connections with people and felt kind of that I had a home and a community there. And since then I've been involved in, I lead our Bible class, so our young people, 11 to 15 year olds on a Sunday morning. And once I started doing that, there was no looking back, because I just enjoyed that so much.
You're saying, so there is a women group, and you're part of the women group.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the case everywhere, in every country in the Presbyterian Church, or is it specific to New Zealand?
I know certainly in the US they have a Presbyterian women's delegation that have come to the same event at the UN. I wasn't aware of it in Northern Ireland. There's two different women's organisations within the church in New Zealand anyway. That there's the PW, the Presbyterian Women's Group, that happens on a congregational level within a church, that do have speakers come and they do evenings and have dinner together and so forth, and that's more of a fellowship group. And then there's this group that happens on a wider level and national level, the group that I'm part of, that's more of a advocacy network.
Okay, and when you say advocacy network, so it's advocacy for gender equality?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's key is providing a voice for women in the church.
Okay, and was it something you were attracted by before entering this group, or did you discover your voice in the group?
I have long identified as a feminist and someone who was passionate about working for gender equality, and I must have shown it every time I opened my mouth, because someone said I should get involved.
You've been listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Beat up crazy old girls, gather round now. Watch your pills turn gold, all the Pino crazy old girls, keep it real cold, because it's a fired up world.
And it's now time to take the Womanity Project questionnaire. What gender do you identify with?
I would identify as a woman with she pronouns.
And what are the attributes you would use to define being a woman?
It's very difficult to assign attributes to being a woman, because I try and resist it as much as possible. But I think graceful. Having some poise and eloquence. Having things, being well organized and having things all together. And being able to get your point across without being forceful or aggressive, kind of. Yeah, that idea about being gentle and nurturing and caring, and I think those are the main things, that the attributes of being a woman very similar to the attributes of being a mother.
And you hesitated, or you say you resist giving attributes to being a woman. Why is that?
Because I grew up being told that I could be whatever, do whatever, and that the idea of being a woman didn't put me into certain attributes. But at the same time, it's still very clear to me which attributes a woman is supposed to have. So it's interesting that I, for example, I play rugby, and I have done since I was quite young, and when you play rugby, it's about being aggressive. So the attributes I associate with being a woman aren't the attributes that I associate with the things I do, which makes it difficult to articulate what attributes being a woman involved, because I feel very womanly but don't embody the attributes.
You said you've been a feminist for a very long time. Would you remember a day or a moment in your life when it was the first time you realized that, or one moment that you think is important?
I have a story from when I was about 4 years old that my dad likes telling at dinner parties. I was very annoyed that I had to do something that he had told me to do, and I kept asking why I had to do what he had told me, and he kept saying different reasonable explanations for why it was I had to do something. And then maybe sixth or seventh time he said, "It's called the patriarchy, Rachel, rule of the father." And I said, apparently stuck my bottom lip out and squinted my eyes and looked at him and said, "Well, I don't like the patriarchy." And he was very sure that from that moment, that was me set on my path. So I think that's kind of a funny moment for our family, reflecting back how different it could have been if I hadn't have been taught at such an early age what the patriarchy involved.
Were there a day where you were particularly grateful to be a woman?
Earlier this year in January, at the end of January, on the day of the inauguration, we in the South Island of New Zealand marched at 9 a.m. So probably 18 or 20 hours before Washington, we were there on the other side of the world, at the bottom of the world, marching. And I, with the trip to the UN coming up and good friends of mine around me, I had never felt so energized by being able to stand up and say that we were women and we were marching together, walking through the streets in New Zealand chanting, "First to vote, first to march." Because in New Zealand, women got the vote before any other country in the world, so it was kind of an epic moment in my feminist history, I think. Oh.
On September 19th, 1893, New Zealand became the first self-governing country in the world in which all women had the right to vote in parliamentary elections.
On the opposite side, is there a moment in your life where you felt ungrateful or limited, challenged to be a woman?
The moment where I feel most limited by being a woman is when I go out into town at uni, and when we go clubbing or even to bars, and it's just the overwhelming sense of entitlement of university males, that you just wish it would be so much easier, I think, to go out and have a good time if you were male. Oh, I wish I could be male just for 2 hours, and then I could actually dance without being annoyed by everyone around me.
If there was something in society regarding gender equality that you think should change, what would that be?
The statistic that haunts me most is that 1 in 3 women experience sexual or physical violence in their lifetime, a lot of these by intimate partners. That would be my main ask for in gender equality, that women can feel safe in their homes and in their relationships, and after those nights out when they've been so annoyed by boys, at least feel safe walking home on the streets. If I had a magic wand to change one thing about gender equality, that statistic would be 0 out of 3. 1 in 100 even would be a better ask.
Is it something you talked about at the UN commission?
The theme of the commission was women's economic empowerment in the world of work. But what became increasingly obvious to me over the week and a half I was there was that gender-based violence is a major barrier to women's equality in other fields. And so a number of government delegations gave reports on the statistics they were collecting on gender-based violence, or I listened to one group talk about intergenerational leadership as a possible solution, and a number of things like that we need to think of creative ways to solve what's a systemic problem and what's a major barrier to other forms of equality.
And if there is one thing for this week and a half that you bring home with you?
There were 8,000 delegates from NGOs there, from all over the world. Those women, a lot of them are doing incredible work to hold their government accountable for the things they sign at the UN. And it's that idea that we persistently have to hold our government accountable for all the frameworks to ensure our rights exist. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights exists. If we can hold our governments accountable to that, if we can call them up whenever that is being breached, then we would see a gender equal world. And the work that people are doing already to hold their governments accountable to that is just amazing, considering it's a lot of it is grassroots, not hugely funded, fairly thankless and pretty traumatizing work, and they're doing it on the ground. So that's been really amazing, hearing the stories of some of the women.
Based on all that, is there something you'd like to change in your life, or you think you could change?
Going back to New Zealand, the thing I'm going to try and get moving on in my campus, my university campus context, is rape culture on campus. I think with the things that I've heard about sexual violence and the persistence of sexual violence as an issue in New Zealand, New Zealand rates are phenomenally high for the developed world. I think a call to the police every 5 minutes, a situation of family violence, and that's a country of 4 million people. So how they all link together, that having a culture of sexual violence on campus then feeds into our horrendous statistics across the country, and that the university campus is a contained environment, that if we could change the culture there, that would filter into wider society over a number of years. So I think the plan is to take action on sexual violence and rape culture on campus, and our first step is raising awareness, some education sessions, and maybe work with Rape Crisis in our area, and the different networks that we have, really using these people as our resources, and to get people talking about these issues, and first awareness and the admittance that we have a problem on our campus.
The rape culture is not specific to New Zealand. If you remember the Brooke Turner case in 2015, formerly known as People of the State of California versus Brooke Allen Turner. Turner was a white student athlete at Stanford University. He sexually assaulted and penetrated an unconscious and intoxicated 22-year-old woman. He was indicted on 5 charges, 2 for rape, 2 for felony sexual assault, and 1 for attempted rape. On June 2016, he was sentenced to just 6 months behind the bars and early released after 3 months. The judge's ruling has sparked outrage across the nation, becoming the latest controversial episode in the ongoing debate in the US about rape culture and campus safety. Listen to these survivors talk about their own sexual assault experience.
I was 21 when I was raped by my best friend in college.
My first assault happened on my 20th birthday.
When I was sexually assaulted, I was 23.
Typically, I wouldn't accept a drink from a stranger, but I didn't view him as a stranger.
And he just started pulling down my pants and said, "I just want to, like, put it in for a second. Like, please, just let me put it in for a second." And I said, "No."
And we called the police, and they asked me questions, if I had egged him on or gave him a false impression.
Like, I have never gotten over the fact that, like, it was my fault that this happened.
The judge who did the sentencing in the Brock Turner case said that a prison sentence would have a severe impact on Brock Turner. Can you talk about the severe impact your assault had on you?
The severe impact that my assault had on me is still ongoing years later.
I struggle with depression.
I ended up developing a pretty serious drinking problem.
If someone moved in my direction in a quick way, I would cringe.
I don't trust anyone.
I couldn't sleep.
It led to me living out of my car after I graduated college.
I started self-harming.
I started drinking really heavily.
If I didn't have substances, I probably would have killed myself.
Suicidal thoughts.
I didn't want to be touched.
I don't like when people stand too close to me on the subway.
Gained a lot of weight.
Couldn't leave my house.
A shell of who I was before my attack.
Stopped talking to my parents.
Afraid to go out in public.
Self-doubt.
When I have new partners, I can't spoon with them in the dark.
I tried to only sleep during the day.
Generally, I just wanted to die pretty much every single day.
When I heard about the Brock Turner case, I cried.
When it comes to the Brock Turner case, I feel so incredibly angry. But I'm also not surprised. I hate to say that. I hate to seem jaded.
I have found myself at such a loss and no longer having the ability to have faith in our justice system.
Privileged male speaks out and takes a stance that it's really going to get anywhere.
It's time to do something about it. And, you know, if Brock Turner is the hill that we have to die on to make it happen, then I'm ready.
Who is the most female influence in your life?
Probably my mum. My mum worked for many years on women's issues. In particular, she worked on migrants and the link between migrants with insecure status and access to public funding and the consequences of family violence. And the work was the same as I was saying of the women from the NGOs before. It's fairly traumatizing and it's hard work. So I think, yeah, that seeing her unafraid to tackle and hear the stories, do the research, suggest the policies and really advocate for those women has been quite inspirational to me.
And if I had to re-ask you now, women's attribute?
Reflecting on the women in my life and the women I've met in the last couple of weeks, and I think an attribute of being womanly is being brave, trying to find your voice, and is trying to resist the immense pressure of the other attributes, which takes a lot of strength. While you can still be caring, it's not the go-to attribute for a woman. I think strength is.
Is there a woman you'd like to say thank you to? It can be a man as well, by the way, as well.
My dad for teaching me about the patriarchy early. That was helpful. And yeah, I think both my parents, I'm very grateful for both my parents in giving me a nudge in the right direction to do this work and to be educated and speaking out on issues of gender inequality. And I'm grateful for the continued support they give me in that.
Where do you see yourself in 20 years?
I'd like to be working for a community-based organization, I think. In 20 years, I'll be 40. So, yeah, my plan is to do this grassroots work on in the community and be somewhere in the world that allows me to do that.
And are you hopeful for gender equality?
I think if you're not hopeful, then, yeah, we have to be solution-focused. And we see that the problems exist. We teach other people that the problems exist, and then we work together for solutions. And if we remain with the focus on solutions, then why not be hopeful?
Who would you like to nominate for the Womanity Project to take the next interview?
I'm going to nominate, since I've spoken about her so much, my mother. She'll be in New York in May, so
fantastic.
I'll tell her to stop by.
Oh, fantastic. And what's her name?
Rebecca Dudley.
Yes. Thank you so much, Rachel, for your time, for your wisdom, for your commitment, and for your hope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/thewomanityproject. We don't have any advertising. We really rely on people's support. So yay to that. Every dollar counts. A special thank you to Lizzie Akstedt, who composed our music, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project, on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Au revoir, tout le monde!
I was 23, she was 35. I was spiraling out, and she was so alive. A Texas girl, real strong, taught me this strong song. So when I start to fall, she says, let your teardrops fall on the piano. Piano crazy old girls, pour your heart out, watch your blues turn gold on the piano. Piano crazy old girls, keep it real cold, 'cause it's a fired up world. Call.